Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 11 of season 2 of the Fine Watchers podcast.
Yeah, good to be here again. As always, I say it every week, but it's loving it. It's great. We're getting great responses, guys, and again, we really appreciate it. Keep hammering like, subscribe. I know we say it every time, but it really means a lot to us, and it really does help us. So please, you know, be sure to subscribe to the channel for more content like this. We're bringing some really cool pieces to the table every single episode, and we've got some amazing guests lined up coming up shortly. So make sure you subscribe because you don't want to miss those guests. They are some of the most interesting people in all of Watchers. So please like, subscribe is the most important thing, and share with your fellow Watch nerds.
Indeed. And let us know what you think of this new compressed format, because we're trying all different things to keep you guys happy. And hopefully the fast pace has been fun.
Yeah.
Wrist check. What do we got?
All right. Well, I'll go first then, shall I? Because usually I'm always coming second.
Indeed.
We'll go with the AP Royal Oak 15202. A few weeks ago, we spoke about the Royal Oak and its alternatives. Look, it's a 15202. It's a Royal Oak. It is what it is, man. What else do you say? It's cool. It's just cool. But, so that's on my wrist today. Blue dial, 15202, AP at 6 o'clock. It's just great.
Can't go wrong.
What about you?
I have gone a little bit in keeping with our theme for today, and I am wearing a vintage Omega Seamaster 176007. This is probably my favourite variation of these, with the deep blue and the white subdial. And a great size for a watch of this age as well. I actually have this one on an Uncle Seiko bracelet, which we've talked about
before. Should we show it off?
And, yeah, absolutely. It matches really well with the original style.
It's a cool piece.
Uncle Seiko has been very, very, very diligent about matching the style of the links and the ends and all that. It's beautiful.
Look at that dial, guys. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
This is great.
Yeah, it's a great watch. Great watch. Lovely face.
Beautiful.
So and it's not too small for a vintage piece, which is unusual, right?
Indeed. No, love the vintage Omega, which brings us to today's topic, which is
vintage. Why vintage is awesome. Why you should be buying vintage. Why you should be collecting vintage. Vintage is amazing.
Indeed. So I tend to be, I guess, the vintage advocate on the show. And I guess for me, the reason that I love vintage is several things. Number one, and not least of which, is just value. Like, you can get such amazing pieces, really iconic designs, some really interesting designs aesthetically, colours and all sorts of things with vintage. And there's such a range. And so that's why I love it. On one of the season one episodes, I spoke with Eric Wind, and we asked him the definition of vintage, and he went back to the origin of the word, which is from the French vingt, which is 20. So technically sort of vintage is anything more than, I guess, 20 years old. And we've sort of stuck to that.
I'm vintage. I'm 31. I'm vintage.
Double vintage. So, we've got a really interesting lineup of watches today.
We do. Where do we start? Where are we going to start today?
Where do we start? I guess let's start with sort of an affordable one.
Yeah.
So Seiko make some great vintage, and Japanese sort of 70s, late 60s, early 70s is really, really interesting. That's a 6134. It's sort of part of the Pogue range. That one is the Bruce Lee.
Yes, Bruce Lee.
That's the Bruce Lee. His variant, I think, was actually black, but certainly had that bracelet and that sort of colour combination.
Sure.
But there's a whole stack of those. There's a Seifert one in a sort of a navy. There's the Pogue. There's the Aussie Pogue in the nice gold yellow dial. So, and cool movement, like chronograph, day date, push set for the date and the day, and automatic, so you can't actually wind it on the crown, which is interesting.
And the world's stiffest clasp. What's going on there, man?
Very stiff clasp on that one. That one was a...
I'm going to leave it.
Near new.
I was going to put it on, but I'm going to leave it because I might break my nail. Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, you can see on the B-roll there, hopefully, that the dial, again, just some of these dials that we're going to show off today are incredible. There's something that you really only get in vintage. Well, I mean, Seiko Vintage has had a big resurgence and a huge fan base lately.
Yeah.
We were saying recently, you know, off camera, a couple of years ago, these were a couple $100, maybe even $100. And now, like $1,000, $1,200, maybe even $2,000 for something like this. You know, if you're looking to collect and sort of keep safe money, Vintage Seiko is a decent place to go right now. And you get some real good quirky pieces. So this is a great option. I like that.
And great, and yeah, very accessible in terms of price, which is nice.
Yeah.
And this next one is kind of really embodies why I love vintage, because in this day and age, most, you know, it's big news when, you know, Rolex and others come out with a coloured dial.
Are we doing Tiffany again? Are we having a Tiffany?
Not just Tiffany, but when they do, you know, they're going, ooh, yellow, ooh, blue.
Bubbles.
But, in you know, especially in the 70s and late 60s, there were, you know, a lot of really cool colours. This particular one is Omega Soccer Timer and, you know, has sort of little sub-dial colours that are useful for the halves in soccer and extended time. Not really something that you would see on a modern watch at all.
No.
That particular one is a beautiful example. The case is just so crisp.
If you told me this came out of Omega 2 years ago, I'd buy it. Like, I'd believe that. This is one of the best examples of a vintage watch I've ever seen in my life.
It's gorgeous. Other than the hands, the hour and minute, and then the sweep seconds should have been like a deep red.
Yeah.
But they've faded nicely, which is great because it's an indication that everything's original on it. But just cool.
And one thing you notice, and you won't see it on the camera, I don't think you might be able to, right over the centre pinion on the crystal, the little Omega logo.
It's the Omega logo, yeah.
It's like little things like that are just so charming. Like, this is what we were talking, I'm obviously not the biggest vintage collector. I've got a couple of pieces and, you know, we obviously sell them in the store, but, you know, it's a... When you see a watch like this, you realise why Omega are probably the kings of the vintage market right now for value, for variation, what you can get from them. Like, I mean, what is this going to run someone?
They run about $6,500 to $7,000.
And in this condition, I mean, it's just...
It's incredible.
It's so cool, guys. And yeah, this
and
is
with
what
the boxing papers more, which exactly. Is very, very rare.
This is what we say, you know, collecting vintage, you're going to get so much variation and interesting design. It just doesn't really happen in the modern pieces.
And then here's, you know,
another example, right?
Moving through them, here's another example. That's a Zenith Rainbow El Primero Rainbow Chronograph. Again, you know, colors, really, really cool colors on the sub-dial. That particular one has been in for, that's my personal watch. It'll never hit my store. I just love it.
Never say never.
I sent it in for... The service, so that has new service hands and everything, which is why everything's bright and clear. But yeah, just super interesting. You'd never see that sort of color combination on a new watch, which is really cool.
And also, you know, a rainbow flyback, it's a very, very complicated movement.
Yeah.
From a manufacturer like Zenith, used to make movements for Rolex. The Daytona debuted with a Zenith movement. I think all the way up until the 2000s, it was a Zenith. So, you know, getting an El Primero. You can get so many amazing El Primero watches, not just the Rainbow Flyback, but, you know, all sorts of El Primero watches, Chronomasters.
Stuff, yeah.
It's incredible stuff from Zenith. And Zenith are a brand that are having a resurgence lately in the modern space. We saw with the Chronomaster Sport, which was essentially the Daytona killer, right? It was the one that just took over. You know, they went nuts on the secondary market. They've settled it a little bit, but they're an incredible watch. Zenith are a great manufacturer.
And the reissue of the original El Primero chronographs have gone really, really well as well.
They're really
nice. Mostly selling over retail.
I mean, talking chronographs and vintage chronographs, like, can we talk Speedmaster?
Indeed.
Like, you talk about Speedmasters and vintage chronos. So tell us about this one.
Well, that particular one is just fits within the
20 years.
The vintage. That was a Japan only edition, which is the Galaxy Express 1999. It has the manga character on the back, and was a sort of a limited edition. But I included it here because, look, if you're looking at vintage watches, really, you know, everyone wants a Speedy in their collection. whether they're a vintage collector or not.
And you can get away with a Speedy being, you know, from the 60s and 70s. It's still a 42 mil chrono. Like, yeah. It's kind of like how we spoke about the sub last episode, I think it was.
Yeah.
Never really changing the 5513 all the way through to the moderns. Like,
yeah.
Speedies are the same. Like, it's
absolutely iconic design.
It is.
You know, up there with one of the, say, top three, I reckon, in terms of, you know, most loved, most unchanged, absolutely perfect chronograph design.
I had a Sapphire Sandwich, the previous generation, not the modern, not the brand new 2021 release. I had a Sapphire Sandwich before that. Like, aside from the crystal, if you put that next to it, they're the same watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you look into certain vintages and you're like, dot over 90s and all that kind of nomenclature that people are looking for. But, I mean, realistically, a Speedy is a Speedy. And if you can get into a 25-year-old Speedy, it's just as good as an almost
modern one.
Because that movement ran for so long that
absolutely.
You get away with the 1861, 1863s.
It was just bulletproof, it's manual winding, you know, and you know, cool providence in terms of it was actually used by NASA as a space, standard issue space watch. Just super cool, beautiful watch, cannot go past in a, you know, sort of an iconic vintage collection. And then, you know, sort of bringing my little collection to a close for the this vintage thing, something a little bit out of left field.
This is cool.
This is a beautiful ladies 70s Seiko set with diamonds and emeralds with a really, really beautiful bracelet and just iconic. And that's one of the nice things, especially for women's watches, the sort of smaller, elegant dress, cocktail style watches. There are just some of the vintage stuff, especially for the 70s, that it's just mind blowing the design and artistry that goes into making those things. And often really affordable.
I mean, this is a Seiko set with diamonds and sapphires. Seiko is supposed to be the cheap, affordable watches. And then this thing is, it's just gorgeous. You know, it might not be the most technically impressive watch out there, but it's beautiful.
Although I would challenge if you picked up an old, you know, Piaget or one of those, Seiko's just bulletproof, so the movement's probably running better.
Yeah. Probably not as nicely finished.
Probably running better than one of those.
That's true.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, the vintage ladies thing is a whole other thing, and perhaps we'll have to do a ladies episode because it's a part of the marketplace that's just not really discussed very often. I want to touch on, you know, I bought three to the table four to the table, I should say, which is about, you know, what I've got available to me. The first one, I want to talk about this one. This is, we talk about watch brands that died quite a lot in the quartz crisis, and this is one of the brands that suffered that fate. This is an Exactus chronograph. Wait till you see this, guys. This is a 1950s with blued hands, almost printed Breguet-style numerals, I would say. And it is one of the most delicious dials I've seen in a vintage chrono for some time.
It's incredible.
We did a little bit of research on this to find out exactly what it was because, you know, it's obviously a brand that's been gone for a long time. It's a very, very special caliber. It's a caliber 51 chronograph. So if you want to just Google, you know, caliber 51, it's an old movement from the 40s and 50s. We've had the back off, we've seen it. It's gorgeous. And the chronograph actually works a little differently where it's usually top, bottom. So start, stop, reset. Mm-hmm. This is actually top, bottom, bottom, which is just a strange... And then you have a lap timing function. So you can actually go top, bottom, bottom. Like you can start it, stop it, start it, start it. It's amazing that in 1950, 1952, this was the technology available in chronographs. And I mean, it's a modern size, 38 mil. It's a beautiful piece, right?
This watch is really a good representative of one of the things I like about vintage is that, especially during that period of the 40s and the 50s and into the 60s, watch manufacturers, because there were lots and lots of them before the quartz crisis, they would experiment with different functions, different layouts, lots of different shapes, especially in the 60s and 70s with crazy shapes and all that sort of stuff.
There's a Bicompax chronograph for $2,000.
Yeah.
$2,000 for that.
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
And the other thing that's amazing, which viewers have a look at on the close-up, is the call timer.
Yeah.
So the 3.5 minutes when phone calls used to be timed. People could time when their next little charge was ticking over. So that's a cool thing that you'll see on older watches, which
little quirks, right?
Just doesn't exist anymore because it just doesn't have to.
The other one I'll talk about is this Grand Seiko. We may have spoken about this recently. It's a Grand Seiko, and I want to say it's a 5656 or a 5646 with a very special sort of silver hammered dial. Grand Seiko high beat from the 1970s. Again, like $2,000. For just such an elegant, beautiful watch. Like, this is what's so great about the vintage watch space, is that you can get these beautiful, you know, in almost pristine condition watches for, you know, very entry-level price points when you're talking about luxury watches.
And the thing is with Grand Seiko from that period, you will struggle to find just about anything else that has the build quality and the reliability of the internals of a Grand Seiko. I love them. We had an episode on them, so please check that out. The good question was, are Seiko really that good? And I think we came to the conclusion that yes, they are.
Probably, yeah.
Well worth checking out and fall in with the other Seiko vintage pieces, which are very much worth checking out.
This next one is a special piece to me. This was a watch that actually, when we first spoke, about a year ago. This was the first luxury watch I ever owned. This was given to me by my father for my 18th birthday. It was his very first Rolex that he ever owned. This is a vintage 1989 Rolex Air King. 34 mil, so a little on the smaller side, but okay for my wrist. My wife actually wears this quite often now. And if you can see, this has what's called a Buckley dial, but it's not quite a Buckley dial. It's almost like a mini Buckley. The Buckley is the white, stark white with the Roman numerals. Usually the Roman numerals on Buckleys are a lot larger. This is a very, very interesting and sort of rare dial. Doesn't particularly add a huge amount of value when you're talking about this level of Rolex. This is a very entry-level Rolex. But very special to me, never been polished, engraved on the back by my parents, obviously. Just a gorgeous way to get into Rolex as well. I think, you know, these are running around $5,000-$6,000. To get into a relatively okay sized Rolex, you know, 34 mil, still doable for a lot of people. I really struggle to find anything in the Rolex catalogue that I'd go for more than something like this. And I'll say, Air King's a great way to start.
I'll say two things about this watch and Rolex generally in this area. So the sort of older, you know, 20 years plus old Rolexes basically throughout their range, but still in the modern, so not the sort of old cosmographs and things like that.
1601s and stuff.
But I think that these are tremendous value. Rolex are, you know, still, as I've said before, I rubbish the bubble pricing on them, but they are one of the best watches ever made.
Yeah.
They are certainly one of the most robust, wearable watches. So something of this age, you know, you say this one's not polished or whatever, but really, you know, it did a few marks kind of add to it with the Rolex.
This is why I don't polish this one, because it's the character of this watch. It's everything my dad ever wore and I've ever worn.
Absolutely. And I think so if someone's sort of thinking about getting, you know, a vintage watch, you can really do a lot worse than one of these. The other thing I'll say about this, which is a general comment, I get questions from people all the time about engraved watches.
Me too.
Okay, like if it's engraved, dear president from, you know, Marilyn Monroe, da da da. Okay, like that's obviously going to add value.
Drive safely.
sometimes the people want to pay less because there's an engraving. Personally, I think that if the engraving is not visible and it's usually it's on your wrist.
Yeah.
But I personally find it really, really interesting because it tells a story of who owned it.
Yeah.
And even if that story is only dear Bob from Mary, then it tells the story of a relationship and all that sort of stuff. So I kind of like that. And you know, this one's got the nice engraving on the back, not too deep, and you know, it's lovely.
And still got the really festy, gross green sticker on it. You know, it's just got like decades of skin gunk. It's disgusting, but I just love it.
You DNA test it and you'll find things out. But yeah, no, definitely, you know, this category of Rolex is, there's a lot. And I actually really like the Air King. Like, I think it's, you know, it's an interesting model over and above just a sort of a perpetual, whatever, just because. I don't know. They've done some interesting things with the dials, different new.
You tend to get like Explorer style dials as well. So you get the 369s on the Air King. Like you do get a bit more fun and play, which I like. The OPs tend to just be stick dials. Like they're pretty obvious. But I think you're right. Like this five digit reference Rolexes that are becoming vintage now and that 20 year old are a really good value buy. Yeah. We spoke about Submariners recently as well. And five digit Submariners that are 20 years old are actually, you know, a $10,000 to $13,000-$14,000
an
incredible buy because they feel modern enough. Like this watch, even though it's from 1989, because Rolex ran this style of clasp and bracelet for so long, they feel fairly modern. Like I love this watch. I will never get rid of this watch. This will go to one of my sons at some point, I'm sure. It might even get another case back and a new engraving, and we'll be able to pass that down. I don't know. We'll see. They're only young.
Just
but
add a name to continue.
That's true,
story.
Right?
That's cool.
That's a great idea. See Ben with the good ideas. You do have them.
Ideas man. I'm an ideas man.
You're not just not even a pretty face.
That's true too.
Look, I love this watch. And vintage Rolex is something that you could do an entire 2-hour episode on, and maybe we'll do something at some point.
Books.
But yeah, I think. You know, guys, let us know what you think about vintage watches, and is it something that you would collect or do collect? Do you have any vintage watches? What do you think about, you know, Zenith El Primeros and, you know, the Omega back catalog? Because I think there's some incredible pieces. There is one last watch I'll run through quickly, which is my personal, I've mentioned this recently, my Universal Genève White Shadow. This is a Gerald Genta, who's obviously the designer of the Royal Oak, which is sort of harkens back to what I'm wearing today. This is a Gerald Genta design watch. It's technically a 34 mil, but because it's got that cushion case, it's just a little bit bigger. It's a micro rotor as well, which again, in vintage movements, you can get some really cool movements for really, really affordable prices. These things are like under $2,000. I think I paid $1,500 for a beautiful stark white dial, gorgeous numerals, ultra thin micro rotor movement designed by the late, great Gerald Genta. And again, it just shows why vintage is amazing, what you can get.
Well, as, I mean, you mentioned the Royal Oak, but he also designed the Nautilus and the Aquanaut. Okay. So, you know, that's the two of the sort of most sought after, very, very highly priced watches from the pen of the same guy.
Yeah.
And this is a beautiful watch. It's an absolutely beautiful watch. And so I guess that's why I think, you know, vintage is... It's interesting. It's diverse. There's a lot of value to be had.
Yeah.
And I think, look, it's again, without this being any sort of, you know, financial advice or whatever, like it's like cars, you know, a new car, you're likely to lose value with the exception of very few models and brands and all that. But you buy a watch, you walk out of the dealership, it loses money. But vintage stuff, you know, if you're lucky and you sell at the right time because a particular model or a particular brand is in favor, you know, typically vintage in good condition and well looked after appreciates over time as less and less of them are available. And
even particularly if they're not, you know, pristine examples, but if just through the natural flow of things over time, these watches just become more expensive. If you buy one and hold on it for 2 years, you're almost guaranteed to make a little bit of money. Like, you know, that's not obviously the main purpose of collecting, but it's something that you need to consider. And vintage, you know, we've spoken so much about the market and risk drops and, you know, Royal Oak's a great example. This is a $250,000 watch. Now it's $100,000. That's a huge drop if you bought it at 250. Mm. It's massive. But let's say you bought a Zenith for $5,000 and 2 years later it's worth $7,000. But you only spent five. Like, it's just what if it was worth $3,000? That's $2,000. Like,
it's a significant percentage return on your money, which
is huge.
You're going to struggle to find somewhere else as well. So,
but yeah, like I say, jump in the comments, guys, and let us know what are your thoughts on vintage watches, and have you thought about making a collection yourself?
Indeed. So, as usual, we finish up with the same request. Please rate, review, like, share, all of that helps us reach more people. You hear it on every podcast in the world. Ours is no exception. But we thank you to those who have. We thank all of those of you who've come with lovely comments in the comment section and on our Instagram. You can find me at FineWatchesAU. You can find Lewis at GC Watch Guy. And from us, episode 11 of season 2 of the Fine Watches podcast. Until next time, enjoy.
Take care.